Hi, this is Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. 2020 has been quite the year, and one of the biggest events of it was a price war that forced oil into negative territory for the first time in history. That, coupled with climate change concerns, has led governments around the world to reconsider reactivating their economies with more sustainable and less fossil fuel-reliant investments. Is Latin America joining the green recovery movement? My colleague Elizabeth Gonzalez interviews two energy experts on the subject. She starts with IHS Market Research and Analysis Director Stephen Nell, who gives an overview of regional trends, then takes a deeper dive into the region's largest economy, Brazil, with Escopo Energia founder and managing director Lavinia Holanda.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en foco.
América Latina en foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Thank you very much, Stephen, for joining me on the podcast today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're talking about the potential for a green recovery in Latin America. So perhaps you can start us off by explaining why investing in the green economy is not mutually exclusive from economic growth.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. And I think the point you raise is an absolutely critical one, particularly in 2020 and particularly for Latin America. So why does it matter this year? Well, we've seen the most profound macroeconomic dislocation in living memory. Global GDP displaced year on year more than 5%. And some of the regional trends, you know, in Latin America, it's closer to 10%. And you've observed essentially a decade of growth being wiped out. So the need for further investment to fund the recovery, to ensure the return to prosperity this particular year is of the utmost significance. And I would have thought for a region like Latin America that's underperformed, perhaps relatively speaking, with regards to economic development trends at a global level, where there's a huge amount of potential that can be tapped into, the green economy offers perhaps a unique way forward and potentially a more adequate way forward when considering national developmental strategies. That's not to say that the existing model has failed, but I think if we're really honest, there's been underperformance and that a shift towards more sustainability narratives and more sustainable outcomes would prospectively lead to greater success in the future. And grasping that opportunity to come back better is a unique moment for Latin American leadership.
And what opportunities for a green recovery do you think exist in Latin America as compared to other regions?
Well, I think there's some quite unique opportunities, really. So one of the things that my team at IHS Market does is track how different rescue and recovery packages have been put together by different governments. And one of the things that's quite notable in a global sense, in those markets where we're seeing more of a focus on a green recovery, there's a big focus on the power sector, on decarbonizing or reducing the emissions intensity of how we produce electricity and heat. And frankly, Latin America doesn't really have to worry about this because of the unique nature of the power sector in many markets, the preponderance of hydro, strong renewable development over the course of the last decade. It means that power sector focused strategies are not necessarily where the effort needs to be marshaled in the first instance. However, you know, there's, for me, great opportunities where emissions are most concentrated. That would certainly be in the areas where oil and gas remain prominent features of national emissions inventories. So focusing on the one hand, say, supply diversification in transportation, which is one sector that still consumes a certain amount of traditional liquids and where emissions are quite concentrated. And on the other, thinking about more sustainable forms of gas, hydrogen in particular, presents some quite unique opportunities. So just thinking about two fuels there, I think there's a great opportunity. In a more general sense, Elizabeth, there's no doubt that compared to other regions and where potential for economic advancement lies, further electrification of the Latin American economy is, I view it as a great opportunity. I was doing some research, and last year oil supported 47%, you know, of energy consumption across the region, and electricity was only 18%. And I think if you think about more sustainable modes of energy systems that can support new economies in Latin America, you would actually want to see those shares switched and much more focus on final energy consumption being met through electricity in a lower carbon fashion, and the overall share of oil in the economy being reduced.
The region right now funnels about $240 billion to fuel subsidies. There's some talk about how those can be moved towards green initiatives instead. Do you see that as viable?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I would say one must be mindful. You know, when we talk about the energy transition, we tend to get into an either or. It's either going to be hydrocarbon or non-hydrocarbon. And actually, the way forward will be and. It will be a mix of traditional hydrocarbons that have unique advantages to support specific forms of economic activity, and indeed where, say, something like electrification, as I've just advocated, is perhaps not a viable solution. And at the same time, there's opportunities for new forms of energy. There is a huge amount of subsidization that continues to reinforce the existing energy economy. At the same time, we're spending a lot of money furthering the cause of, say, renewable deployments. One would suggest that under the difficult economic conditions that many public sectors across Latin America face, a degree of rationalization would be called for, which is, if your policy goal is the longer-term decarbonization of your economies, then investing quite precious public sector resources in supporting prospectively inefficient forms of resource extraction, production, or indeed consumption, doesn't make a great deal of sense. There is, you know, big employment opportunities that exist within these segments of the economy. I would not view them in terms of like a zero-sum game, as it were. I think that the energy sector and the industries that it support can continue to evolve in some very important ways. That doesn't necessarily mean withdrawing subsidies from one heavy employment sector comes at the cost of jobs. There can be twice as many jobs in some of the new applications that government funds may be directed towards. If nothing else, some of the strategies that different governments are putting forward requires more of a level playing field to achieve the high levels of emission reductions called for, and pulling subsidies back is one of the ways in which that level playing field can come to pass.
Now, decarbonization might be one policy goal, and another might be resilience. And yes, those aren't necessarily synonymous because, for example, the region, the power sector, is highly dependent on hydropower, which is a renewable source, but a conventional one. And it's actually made vulnerable when you look at the El Niño effects of climate change. So some governments might think that diversifying their power sector to be more resilient is actually adding natural gas to that mix, to that energy mix. I know that Colombia, for example, and Argentina are exploring their natural gas reserves. So what do you think about this, you know, conundrum with hydropower? Would it make sense to move away from that dependency, and how would you do that in a green way?
Well, it's a great question. One of the things that we must be quite honest about is that the future of Latin America will play out against the backdrop of a changing climate, and that the physical risk of climate change are an uncertainty which frames many of the strategies that governments have put forward. You're quite right in that hydro variability can have a profound influence on the overall emissions intensity of an economy. And frankly, the lights need to stay on, and we need more lights. We need more power to the people of Latin America, not less. And a more diversified power supply base would clearly reinforce the opportunity to provide just that. I think in terms of the mix between different supply sources, there is an opportunity for natural gas to play some of that. Let's say the firming up of capacity or the degree of resilience that you highlight, it is variable, but gas is quite uniquely suited, for peak generation, and its technical character allows it to serve quite a unique role. And at the same time, natural gas is not necessarily consistent with the net zero targets that different Latin American governments have put forward, from the likes of Argentina and Colombia in particular. It's going to be quite challenging to meet some of the commitments that have been made with a more gas-intense mix. So you could perhaps view gas as a unique transition fuel to enable emissions reduction and access to energy, and in some cases, improved air quality, while moving towards a lower carbon mix. In some respects, what's been notable in 2020 is that renewable technology costs have continued to decline, presenting really great opportunities for Latin American governments to have stronger domestic energy resources. When I think about resilience and energy security, part of it would be insulation from international commodity markets. These renewables will offer you the opportunity for just that, for more domestic generation and a more balanced mix, including hydro, some gas, but also more wind and more solar, as we've seen governments encouraging over the course of the last 5 and in some cases 10 years. That promises a really good mix.
You mentioned commodity exporters in the region. We typically had 5 until this year when Guyana entered the mix of oil exporting countries. These commodity exporters are very reliant on oil revenues. Can they continue to develop their oil and gas exploration projects while they invest in other renewables? And do you see any interest in actually doing that?
It's a great question because, hydrocarbons are a big part of many Latin American economies and big employers, sources of revenue for countries, for families. And the way the energy transition is developing, there's more contests. So I would suggest, the oil and gas projects that are underway in the region will now face more challenges than they did before. This is from a basic fundamentals standpoint. We have a range of global energy scenarios, 5 in total, and in virtually all, global GDP is down compared to our outlooks of last year. And likewise, the expectation of oil, total liquids demand is down. The prospects for gas is rather more mixed. But the message here, Elizabeth, is that COVID-19 is resulting in a permanent loss of growth potential in macroeconomic and energy demand terms. Now, what that means is that there's going to be far more competition for what demand will persist for those fuels. In some cases, those regional supply stories face great advantages and access to domestic markets. From the point of view of international exports, well, there's a lot of surplus capacity in some segments of the liquids and gas market. And that means that I think cost containment when it comes to those new projects is an absolute imperative. And I know that the developers that I've been working with in Latin America are very, very much focused on keeping project costs down. In many cases, they're quite fit for the leaner, say, oil or natural gas prices that we would now be expecting. I think another point to add, and it's certainly something that I've been really encouraged by, is that another challenge will be the sustainability character of the resources that the region brings to the international market. And what I mean by that is we've really, against the backdrop of the pandemic recession, observed quite a resolute shareholder and stakeholder focus on ESG, environmental, social, and governance factors, particularly when it comes to extractive industries and oil and gas in particular. I've been quite fortunate to spend some time alongside regional oil and gas players in ARPEL, the Latin American Oil and Gas Association. And I've really been encouraged by the focus that institution and its membership have placed upon sustainability through the energy transition. So I think that those projects that are underway are being directed in the, let's say, an optimal fashion. And at the same time, the international competition for more sustainable liquids and more sustainable gas has perhaps never been greater.
So let's talk about some of those initiatives that you know of within the region, because that I know of, there's been very few governments that have committed to some sort of green recovery package in restarting the economy. I know that Chile and Colombia are some examples, but the big players are missing. What do you know of in terms of initiatives taking place, and what are those missing pieces to spur development in green technology?
My team has been conducting some research on how different governments approach the question. And if I was to generalize the findings of that research, Elizabeth, it's often where sustainability initiatives were already established, the opportunity to shift the focus of the economy in response to COVID-19 has resulted in an acceleration of green trends, as it were, particularly in energy. So this can be exemplified by, let's say, conditional stimulus funding from a given government, resulting in a greater likelihood of emissions reduction. One of, you know, a great example is some of the ways in which European countries have qualified their support for the aviation industry. If you are to receive these funds, then you will have to improve the performance of your fleet. You'll have to introduce lower carbon fuels. Where in Latin America, you know, say in Uruguay or Panama, where you've got some really interesting existing frameworks, you know, on the one hand for the achievement of essentially a zero carbon power sector fueling a zero carbon economy. And then in the case of Panama, the energy transition agenda to 2030, which again, I think puts renewable supply diversification into an interesting social context because it's about access to energy and it's about empowering women as much as it's about changing terawatt hours emissions intensity. I would expect those programs to receive a further degree of reinforcement and become even more successful. Now, as you rightly say, in contrast, when we look at some of the largest economies in Latin America, the opportunity to come back better and to focus more on sustainability outcomes has not been grasped. So if I was to call out Argentina and Brazil in particular, we would, in the basis of our methodology, see a deceleration of the energy transition in these countries. In some cases, it's to do with foregoing things like new capacity auctions that would bring a broader supply mix. In others, it's just throwing a huge amount of stimulus funding at industries that are more in keeping with a less sustainable vision of the economy. And I think that this is representative of the Argentine and Brazilian experience both, where there's been, in some cases, you know, setting things like minimum prices for domestic crudes, you know, reinforces price points that could be rationalized in ways that would ultimately end up being more sustainable. That's certainly been the story in Argentina. For Brazil, well, I think, you know, really for me, that there's been a lot of bailouts without conditionality. And ultimately, sustainability is a great opportunity in this crisis. And the opportunity to make some of the funds that, say, the Brazilian government has afforded to, you know, its largest companies and its largest emitters without a degree of conditionality or qualification is an opportunity that's been lost. For me, looking around the world and seeing where the accelerations through the pandemic and where the rescue and recovery packages look the greenest, having a net zero target to anchor your expectations of where we need to be 30 years from now in 2050 is the best possible start. And I would certainly like to see more of those across Latin America and more policies in the midterm being developed to ensure that we're on course to realize those goals.
Where do you think that paradigm shift is going to begin? Is it the private sector? Is it the government? Is it consumers demanding more of their governments? Or is it an external force like the United States demanding that the region start meeting its Paris accord obligations?
Well, I think it'll be a mix. When we factor in the different, let's say, constitutive elements of a low carbon future, clearly the first place it starts is with, you know, you and I. We as individuals, as consumers, we have to be willing to accept a change and prioritize different kinds of outcomes in the way we spend our money, where we shop, the way we approach consumerism, particularly in the sense of prioritizing certain kinds of sustainability outcomes. One of the things that's come to pass through this pandemic, I speak to you from central London in the United Kingdom, and we're facing, you know, a degree of restrictions here within the community, which means I'm shopping a lot more local. You know, that's good for local business. I have had to make some sacrifices as a consumer, but for me, they're well worth it. And I think that degree of compromise and sacrifice on the part of individuals, families, and as consumers, so we accept we have to be different. The second thing is we support platforms that are aligned with those views, and that can be different governments, support for different types of regulations, which in some cases will require a sacrifice, Elizabeth, like that we should be under no illusions that change doesn't always come cheap, but it's all about how we account for the benefits and factoring in some of the longer term sustainability returns that a sacrifice in the short term can make. I don't think that coercion is going to work. I think, you know, in some senses, Latin America has led on issues like climate change historically. If anything, you know, you see the rest of the international community catching up. And yet it's going to require a quite innovative mix of technologies, both domestic to the Latin American economy and international, to really tap into the potential to support the platforms that are emerging to meet that social acceptance that we want to be different.
As Stephen noted, Brazil has done some backtracking when it comes to advancing a green economy. In this next conversation, the founder and managing director of the energy advisory firm Escopo Energia describes what it'll take for Brazil to get on board and its abundant potential.
Well, thank you very much, Lavinia, for joining me on the Latin America in Focus podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you are a founder of an energy advisory firm, as well as a board member of a power generation company, both which are based in Rio de Janeiro. But I'd like to begin by having you put on your economist hat on, given that you have a PhD in economics from Getulio Vargas. Can you explain to us how sustainability initiatives and green technologies can be compatible with economic growth?
I think many people used to ask this kind of question a year ago or so, but it became clear that there's nothing incompatible between, you know, economic growth and green economy. On the contrary, what we are seeing is an effort and a movement from different countries in different regions of the world after the pandemic, saying that they are betting on a green recovery to make the economy thrive again. So what this tells me is that people are seeing that a low carbon economy is actually a big and a huge opportunity to create jobs and to recover from a situation that was so unexpected to everybody, and especially in countries and in regions like Latin America, where we have so many natural resources and so many opportunities to recover and to thrive from, you know, our natural resources and from the green economy.
And we know that the region right now is headed for about an 8% economic contraction. Brazil specifically is projected to have between 5 and 6% fall in GDP, which would be the deepest economic contraction since the country began reporting data in 1900. So obviously, you know, this economic recovery is top of mind for the administration of Jair Bolsonaro, but his rhetoric and his suggestions for policy have tilted more towards deregulation of mining and other ventures in the Amazon, following a year of, you know, record illegal logging, wildfires that were the worst in a decade. So now, from your perspective as an industry insider, what do you see is the conversation taking place in the private sector? Does it echo Bolsonaro's rhetoric, or is it moving in a greener direction?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because we do have to take into account that Latin America is still a region of great economic challenges. So the economic aspect and you know, income and employment is very important and must be taken into account when designing a green recovery or a new, a new plan for infrastructure or energy. On the other hand, what I see is that when you see the government saying that, well, we have to allow mining in natural reserves, and we need to foster the development in the Amazon region, no matter what happens there, you see the private sector showing the government that you do not need to jeopardize the preservation of the forest to make, you know, the economy, or to make, to bring development to that region. Right. So what we are seeing is that the private sector is kind of reacting to the government and saying, well, you know, this kind of policy is actually bad for business. If we destroy the environment, everybody's watching and information is going, you know, all around the globe. And this is going to be bad for business. So people know what is happening. And people care about climate change, about the Amazon, about the forest, and they are looking for sustainable products. Why are we doing that? So that's what the private sector is saying, right? Of course, you have different types of private sector, but I would say that most of the reaction you're seeing against, you know, any kind of bad, you know, environmental policy we are seeing in Brazil comes from either the civil society and the private sector, because people are seeing that this is not good for business and this is not good for the country and for the world. In the end of the day, the government wants to attract investment to Brazil, right? And if the political environment is too turbulent and the private sector says, well, you know, it's too much volatility, so I don't want to invest here. So I think the private sector plays a very important role in putting this kind of pressure to the government and making, you know, the policies more rational.
When we look at the abundance of natural resources in Brazil, as well as those critical infrastructure gaps, where do you see are those opportunities to invest in green recovery in Brazil?
Well, I think on the one hand, Brazil has many different types of resources. We dominate, you know, biofuels technology. We have wind, we have the sun, we have, you know, hydropower plant. We likely can produce green hydrogen at some point. We have natural gas. So we have really an abundance of resources. I would say two things. First of all, I don't think Brazil as a country will have just one size fits all, you know, solution for the whole country. So you have different regions which will have different types of resources that make sense in that region and not in the whole country. That's one thing. The other thing, and I think this is key, is about the infrastructure, because we have lots of infrastructure gaps, you're right. But in order, for example, to deploy let's say, electric vehicles, you have to have a recharge infrastructure, right? So someone has to build it. And that's one good thing about this, and one very challenging point about this is, well, we still have, you know, space to build a new infrastructure. That's one thing, but we cannot make mistakes in the sense that whatever infrastructure we invest in today is going to be here for the next, let's say, 30 years, right? So if we decide to invest in, let's say, a gas and LNG infrastructure, what happens if within the next 10 and 15 years or 15 years, this becomes obsolete or this becomes stranded somehow? So this kind of choice is going to be crucial for Brazil, right? So because whatever you invest in now, we're going to be, let's say, married to this infrastructure for the next, let's say, 20 to 30 years.
So given that concern about these very long-term trajectories for massive infrastructure projects, do you see a role still for oil and gas? Or do you think it has to be a cleaner cut between fossil fuels and renewables?
The short answer is I don't see a very abrupt cut in oil and gas in Brazil. So I do think we're going to have, we're still gonna have, you know, oil and gas production and relevant oil and gas production in Brazil for the coming years. On the other hand, I might not be in the most optimistic side of the market, let's say. I do think we're going to live with oil and gas production for a long time because we're going to need it. But I do think that some of the projects that people think are economically viable today might not be so within 5 years or so. I think we're moving fast, not only Brazil, but the world is moving fast towards carbon pricing, new technologies, and this will come. And then when it comes, we might not have time to produce all the, you know, hydrocarbons that we have potentially in Brazil.
And what do you think are the missing pieces to spur this development? Is it an investment issue? Is it a technology issue? Is it just not having any backing from the government, regulation?
Probably a combination of all the factors you mentioned. I do think that technology is an issue. Let's take hydrogen, for example. I think there is a huge potential for hydrogen in Brazil and elsewhere, and in the continent as well. But I do think that we still have some way to go to make the technology safe and mature. I don't see, for example, hydrogen being used by, you know, in transportation too soon. I think it's going to be probably start to be used in the industry or in electricity sector because of safety reasons, because it's easier to control. It's easier to have, you know, security protocols to use hydrogen. The industry is used to deal with regulations and safety rules, etc. So I do think that we still have some way to go to make hydrogen, in terms of technology, to make it viable. On the other hand, I do think that public policies and regulations do play an important role in the development of new technologies. One example I can bring from Brazil is the development of wind generation in Brazil, which was fantastic. So within 10 years, we increased a lot the generation capacity in wind, onshore wind in Brazil. basically due to the right public policy or energy policy in place. So I do think that the government has to play a role in developing and fostering new technologies.
If you were to use some examples of the region in terms of an example that Brazil might follow, which of the countries would you point out?
It's very hard for a Brazilian to mention another Latin American country as an example, but I do have one. I think Chile. Chile is doing a great job in rethinking, their energy plan and trying to bring, roadmaps or to build roadmaps for the deployment of new technologies. They just launched a national plan for hydrogen just 2 or 3 weeks ago, which I haven't, had access to, but I know they launched it. They are considering hydrogen for, shipping, for the industry, for electricity generation. So I think they are doing their homework. And that would be, a good example to follow.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissas. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Gonzalez. The music in this podcast was recorded at America Society in New York City. Learn about concerts online at musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you liked this episode. You can help us spread the word by writing a review, giving us 5 stars, and subscribing at Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.